education, though, we have to have good material, evidence-based material, before we communicate it. But once we've got it, we have to know how to communicate it. Otherwise, nobody listens. So Sylvia is going to take the next few minutes in giving us that technique of how to be able to communicate our message more effectively. Thank you, Sylvia.
Thank you. Merci.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Buenos días.
Buenos días.
¿Cómo están? How are you?
Bien.
So everybody want to just stand up for a minute? And just stretch your legs really fast, not too much, okay? For those who are translating, I do speak fast, so I communicate in bullet points. Okay, you can sit down now. You can only imagine my difficulty in my job when I have to put all these together in 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 1 minute, and make some kind of motivation, encouragement, and try to really make the public aware of how to really live a healthier lifestyle. And then on top of that, you know, try to reach masses amounts of people of different cultures without offending them, without crossing borders, whatever. It is a very difficult job. And then to top that, nutrition communications is very conflicting messages. As you can see, there is so much out there on the internet today making my job a lot difficult nowadays, because everybody wants something, a miracle. Everybody wants something that is going to be a sure shot, that is good for everybody, and that's sometimes a little bit of impossible. So today, we are going to try to go into a background of what are some of the nutrition messages that we hear every day, and how we can counteract some of those messages. How can we deal with those messages? Some of the consumers' attitudes and behaviors, because we have listened to the public and see how they want their communications delivered to them. Also, the role of the nutrition-rich foods. We're going to look at in nutrition education applications and tips, and then we'll summarize it, give you a few resources so that you can go home with something. These are some of the nutrition messages, and I have been doing this now for 25 years. I cannot hardly believe, you know, Dr. Khan was one of my professors at Loma Linda. 25 years ago, I graduated. So it's been a long road and a lot of learning along the way. Some of the most basic terms that I see a lot of mothers doing, clean your plate, finish everything. This is really good for you, which can create obesity later in life or overeating. If a little is good, why don't we just have a lot of it? Why just talk about one carrot? Why not have 10, 20 carrots? Not leaving enough room for other nutrients. Exercise, exercise, exercise. Do something. Exercise. But we don't really know if that person has any issues with their knees, with their hands. They can't get up from bed. We don't know whether they are, you know, what their age is. Whether they can only do it at home, what kind of equipment they have at home. I mean, it's very difficult just to tell somebody, go exercise, without knowing what consequences he might have. Eat more fruits and vegetables. I mean, that's just like, you know, everybody who goes on a diet, well, I'm just going to eat more fruits and vegetables, because that's just going to make it better. And not thinking about other nutrients that you find in other foods, such as legumes and nuts and other foods. Limiting fat intake, they think that this is just the ticket to losing weight or to having a healthier lifestyle. Well, that is part of it, but it's not all of it. And avoid sugar. I mean, we've heard this so much the last few years because they think that that's the culprit of the obesity epidemic in the world, not just in the U.S. And in reality, I mean, we're humans and nobody's going to go without a cookie for the rest of their life. So we have to deal with that. This is some of the issues and the communication messages that we hear every day that might have unintended consequences. Low-fat diets, more gain weight, because a lot of them, they choose foods that are higher in sugar, higher in carbohydrates. So how we create that balance? Low-carb diets, which became really big the last few years too, do certainly provide nutrient deficiencies on the grain foods not getting enough grains can create many, many deficiencies in other areas in chronic disease. High fructose corn syrup, another big word that we've been seeing, and, you know, also they portrayed as something that is going to create some chronic disease. And, you know, when we look at the whole picture, it's not just one food item or one beverage that's creating all these problems. And you might be avoiding some foods that may help some population groups to get some nutrients. Another one is the weight loss. And this is one of my expertise. I've been dealing with a lot of people trying to lose weight with different ethnic groups because that's when it becomes very challenging. There is less resources for them to know how to lose weight. And we have to make sure that they don't have any bone loss or muscle loss, which many times we just give them a sheet of paper and say, follow this diet, or they read it in a really, you know, colorful magazine and not knowing that that might be deficient in some protein or deficient in some of the nutrients that they need to create that balance. And a vegetarian, which we've been hearing a lot about, and we're not going to deal too much into it because I think you're getting plenty of this information here, but when people want to go on a vegetarian diet, they think it's just about omitting meat, and then they go happy thinking this is all I have to do. But again, you have to think about what nutrients you need to substitute. The American Dietetic Association did a really interesting study in 2008 about nutrition in you and the trends. And it was really interesting. You know, I love hearing this data because it really cements what I have learned from the public. Consumers said that nutrition and physical activity are very important to them personally. I mean, I can't think of anyone that I deal every day that is not aware and is not worried about their nutritional well-being. I mean, have you encountered, I don't encounter many people, maybe I can count it with my hand, the people that say, I really don't care about nutrition. It's very, very few people out there. And the statistics show that 67% say it's very important for them personally. 40% of these people strongly agree with the statement that I actively seek information about nutrition and healthy eating. I mean, if you think about it, some of the most well-known websites are the nutrition websites and websites that are about health and nutrition. And we need to steer them in the right direction to the proper websites, the resources that are really valid for them. A few more results from this very interesting study was that most of the information is on TV. 63% of the public get their nutrition information from television. So if I can tell you something, you need to get on TV whenever you can. You need to give interviews because you are the health experts. If you know that you have a health, you read, you are up in your health and nutrition information, get out there, get into the TV, radio, magazines, and write. It is not that difficult. They're always looking. And we know that the most trusted sources are dietitians, nurses, doctors. They are the health practitioners. And what's interesting to me, and this is something that I always keep in my mind, is that 54% of people think that they are foods that they should never eat. And this is really sad because it makes me believe that we start our nutrition education with the wrong foot, telling them what not to eat, what not to have, everything they're doing wrong. I sometimes even catch myself doing that. I was counseling somebody at acid reflux, and the first thing I said is, here's the list of foods that you should avoid. No, and the poor girl, she was only 15 years old. She looked at me, her eyes were, I'm like, I'm so sorry, let's start all over again. Let's take that list off. Let's start with what you eat, and let's see what things you need to continue eating. So if you caught yourself doing that kind of method, please avoid it, because this is what people think. You know, they are so afraid of getting nutritional education because it's always about what not to eat. And 38% strongly agree that they're always hearing information that is negative, always what's not to eat. And this is something that we really need to keep in mind. Another great source of another survey from the International Food and Information Council, they do these frequent surveys with the public, too, that are very interesting to see. And more than 60% of these consumers believe that there are certain foods and beverages that do provide benefits. So, you know, we need to be open-minded to the fact that there are things out there that our public may need to be aware of. So, you know, do give them, you know, when you find something that it works for you, do share it with the public. And you know that there is substantial evidence to back it up. More than 80% of them are consuming or will be interested in consuming foods and beverages for such benefits. And again, this goes with the other side where people are looking for that magic pill. And if they see a product that, oh, it can help me with, you know, chronic disease and diabetes and heart disease, it's like, you know, it helps with so many things. Of course, you know, they think this is something that they should keep eating more of it. But we need to be very careful how we deliver those messages, how we share this information with them. Simplifying diets are often, you know, they limit foods. So we need to be careful to how we portray this information to them. If we are giving them a low, you know, we know that a lot of diabetic patients do benefit from a low carbohydrate diet. It's not just from omitting sugar, like many of them believe, and that they do benefit from a little more protein because this is one of the things that is not, that's not going to raise their blood sugars. But at the same time, this is not for the whole public here. We're talking about some individuals that will benefit from that, and then we need to make sure that the carbohydrates they take are whole grains and et cetera, so we give a more individualized approach. We know about vegetarian diets, of course. We've been hearing a lot about it and how there's, if they're omitting or limiting meat products or animal products, you know, what things they need to have to substitute those important nutrients that they're missing, because it is possible. And a vegan diet, it's a very difficult diet. It's not easy to follow. It might be easy for us because we are all, you know, raised on these diets. And, you know, and I'm thankful every day that I wake up that my parents and my grandparents, you know, raised us with this knowledge that they have. But a lot of people in our public do not understand a total vegetarian. I love that term because vegan people are like, what is that? I love that using that term, total vegetarian. They don't understand really what, you know, how you really go about it. So you have to go in small steps when you're trying to help somebody become vegetarian or total vegetarian. High protein diets, of course, you know, they become quite popular. And again, you know, they not only, you know, I wish they will consider more legumes and more nuts, but in most cases, is not the case. They are just eating heavy doses of meat, thinking that this is just a free license to eat all the eggs and meat that they want. And again, you know, there's a lot of detriments to eating a diet that is high in protein. And many diets too that omitting, especially among Hispanics and a lot of ethnic groups, they think that a diet that is higher or that has carbohydrates or dairy products, it's a diet that will make you gain weight. I mean, there is people that omit this for health reasons or for religious reasons or for X reason, but if somebody's just doing it to lose weight, this is not the proper way to do it, and we need to advise them on that. I'm not going to go too much into this, but when I deliver information about the detriments of omitting certain food groups and how they need to substitute if they need to, I like to put them in very simple terms so that they understand. Simple terms that is not going to get lost in the shuffle too. A lot, for example, a diet low in in dairy will have low calcium, magnesium, potassium, riboflavin, I mean B6, B12, A, and D. And then we deal with how to substitute those specific nutrients if somebody wants to go in a total vegetarian diet, because the causes are fractures, osteoporosis, hypertension, colon cancer, etc. So this is kind of how I like to portray it to them in a way that if they want to become total vegetarians or vegetarians, we go and find the nutrients that they're missing and where can they find that in foods or in a supplement if needed. And again, this is again, you know, another, you know, with the high protein diet, what are the consequences of that? In just very simple terms. Again, you know, we have the attention span is very small. So you want to go short, precise, without scaring them. Remember that. Start positive. And when we're trying also to do this nutrition education, you know, there is nothing for me more passionate that makes me wake up every morning and to tell people about the beauty of eating healthy foods. I mean, I think when you crunch into an apple, when you crunch into a carrot, when you eat those wonderful, beautifully cooked grains and legumes, I find so much enjoyment on that I want to share that with the public. I want to share with them that eating healthy is about enjoyment. It's not about sacrifices. It's not about, oh, I'll never have a piece of meat ever again. I'll never have dessert. I'll never have a glass of milk ever again. It's not, if somebody's feeling that way, do not make them go into a specific eating plans that will make them feel that they're missing and they're losing, like their arms or their legs. And that's what, when I deal with a lot of ethnic groups, especially when they're so used to only eating meat, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and you know, their foods are more skewed to one group than others, and they don't have a well-balanced diet, we start in small steps. And the first step is by looking at the foods, you know, the sensory, the aromas, the taste of them. That's when we really start to making them enjoy a healthy lifestyle. It's the bright colors. I mean, when you go in these markets here, it's the first thing I did when I landed in Geneva. I went to a market, and the vegetables and fruits, to my surprise, are packaged so beautifully that I wish every company out there, you know, that packs anything, could think of how to package these fruits and vegetables so beautifully. They were so appealing and appetizing that you can't help it but eat them in your diet every day. The bright colors, the different varieties. And when I tell, you know, groups that are very young or that don't have a lot of knowledge in nutrition, I say, if you remember one thing, one single thing, is to have all the colors in your plate. That's it. I mean, my little kids can tell you that. Since they were babies. Oh, mommy, we need more orange. We need more bright, you know, more bright greens in my plate here. I need to add something to that macaroni. I'm missing some whites. And we need the mushrooms. They have lots of vitamin D too. So the more colors you have in your plate, the easiest way to assure yourself that you have a well-balanced diet. So when we go into the market, we make sure that we bring green and purple and red and orange and yellow and all the colors, and it becomes a really fun game. The grains, I mean, when I love going into other countries and experimenting with their grains, that wild rice, there's quinoa, there is so many things besides rice and oatmeal really out there. That is so interesting. And when you meet people, you know, what makes it so interesting for me to deal with the public is that I embrace their culture, I embrace their foods, and we find what's so nutritious about what they're eating. And then we add a little more to even make it more powerful. If we need to go into, if somebody needs to eat dairy, eats a lot of dairy, we take them first into maybe a low fat. I mean, most of the public that I deal with, if I mention skim milk or something low fat, they will frighten. If I say, don't eat meat, you know, whatever, you know, that's not the first steps that we take. Again, it's the aromas, it's the enjoyment. And slowly, you're going to find that they are going to slowly to enjoy these foods more than the meats and the dairies and all the other foods that they were loading their plates with. And with the NOT study nowadays, you know, they're getting a lot of publicity. And this is like what I call a jump start for me. Because people always are looking when these studies come out, you read about it, and then you can explain it to the public how to best utilize that data that comes out. For example, the study on the walnuts and how they're great and rich in omega-3s, and they're rich in so many vitamins and minerals, and why we need those few nuts every day, and how portable they are, and how easy it is to carry them anywhere you're in the world. I mean, I think about, you know, I say it's not that expensive to do these healthy eating. The most important thing when you are dealing with the public too is that you must individualize their needs. I cannot find, even in my own household, my husband, my two children, my immediate family, everyone has their own needs. Somebody needs more protein. Somebody needs a little more energy, more carbs, and for their, because they're exercising. I mean, there is so many needs for everyone. And I haven't seen two people that are exactly the same yet. So you need to take into consideration when you're dealing with somebody as quickly as you can. When people ask me about a diet, which there's not a day that goes by someone say, can you give me a diet? You know, I'm something you got on the internet, just, you know, out of your file cabinet, I need a diet. I stepped back and I said, what's your age? What is your age? What you do every day? What kind of work you do? Where are you from? What kind of religion you follow? What's your ethnic background? Because gender, genes, there's so much studies now in genomics and how genes really portray a lot of how your structure is going to be. And we need to bring them to reality that a lot of times there are certain bodies that are meant to be that size, and we can, of course, make them healthier and look at how they are, but we're not going to make everybody's skin thin. That is not possible. That is not humanly possible. There are social issues. And when I deal with the Hispanic public, this is an issue that is very touching, and I've seen a lot of other ethnic groups do it too. You know, if you don't eat something that your aunt made, that is so offensive, they'll never speak to you again. That might be loaded with fat and eggs and sugar. How you deal with that? That is a very difficult issue when you're dealing, you go into South America, a country like Argentina, where they eat meat, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and they're proud of it. You come to my house, I make you a great steak. I make you the best steak you ever had. You leave that vegetarian nonsense thing. How you deal with that? In a polite way that you're not going to offend them. And you know, these are the issues that you need to understand before you put a diet in front of them and before you put any meal plan in front of them. Their habits they have. I mean, so many times I see these patients that are diabetic or have high blood pressure, and the amount of alcohol they consume, it's like unheard of. And how you deal with that without, you know, your eyes popping or you're falling off the chair. You think, okay, we just kind of take a few beers down. I think, you know, we might make a huge step in your lifestyle. But how we do that in small steps without offending them and without really sending them in a whole other direction? Because that's what happened. We start with our, you know, we come loaded with our nutrition information, and what we most of the time do, we skew them in the wrong direction. So as health professionals, our health is to prioritize. You know, if I have a baby, I'm not going to make them run before I help them to walk. If I have an individual who's been eating a lot of meat and very few vegetables, I'm not going to say your first step is to decrease your meat intake. I might take a look at something that is a lot easier, such as go to sleep more. If you sleep 8 hours, you might feel a little better. You might have more energy. Now, that's an easy step they can take today. And as we grow and as time goes by, then we deal with the meat and other issues. But if they're ready, they've been trying already to reduce their meat intake, and they're already using more legumes and more beans and more of the other foods, then we're ready for that step. But again, you're not going to make them run before they walk. And that's why we need to individualize and prioritize their health. Many times when somebody wants to lose weight, I don't say to them, you know, you need to decrease your calorie intake from 5,000 to about 1,600 or 1,800 calories. No. And they're shocked because, oh, I know, Sylvia, I'm going to go in salads tomorrow. I'm going to eat all carrots and celery. Apios and zanahorias todo el día. Okay? That's what they want to hear. And when they hear, we say, well, you know what? Why don't we start drinking more water? Or, you know what? I find the greatest thing to help you drink more water. I caught pineapple. You know, I live in the tropics. You know, I wish. And I cut pineapple, and I make a big jar of water and with ice, and I put pineapple slices. Or I cut sliced oranges, and I put, every day I put a different fruit. I tried cucumber the other day with water, and it was so delicious. Made me feel like I was on a spa. Now, does that sound better than eating, just drink more water? You see my point here? Or how we need to be a little more creative when we deliver this nutrition information. And they're like, oh, I'll try that today. I'll go home, I'll buy a big jar, I'll put water, put ice, and slice some fruit in it. Any leftover fruit, I said, will do. If you tell me the ones that you like the most, because maybe I'll try them too. Because I need more variety as well. If you have a guiding system like my pyramid, and I saw that here in Geneva, actually, they have one that is, you know, kind of looks similar to the pyramid, but it's portraying their specific foods. Use that because that has already has a great stepping stone of what the basis, a foundation of a healthy, well-balanced diet is. And you just want to make sure, ensure that they're getting the nutrients that they are missing. But again, slowly. Supplements. You know, we hear a lot about supplements. And supplements, you know, of course, you know, They are needed in many instances, especially somebody who's in a total vegetarian diet. It's very important that many times, for example, somebody, teenagers, my daughter is a total vegetarian, and I'm constantly, you know, watching after her. I say, I'm watching you, darling. Did you take your vitamin today? Because, you know, they forget. I mean, they forget one day. It's not going to be horrible, of course. Like, they look at me like the food police many times. People don't even want to eat dinner with me anymore. And I'm like, it's okay, I eat ice cream, and I eat, you know, and I could eat a little bit of cookies sometimes. I'm human. Don't crucify me. But with supplements, you know, you have to walk a fine line, too, because sometimes too much of a good thing could be a bad thing, too. And where, for example, I find that people, you know, who go into a vegetarian diet are increasing their fiber very fast, which could create constipation. And you're like, oh my gosh, what happened here? I eat so much fiber and I'm so constipated. I feel so bloated. I even started thinking of fiber supplements. Hit me on the head. And what happens is, You're creating the opposite effect when you and that's why it's so important that they individualize and we tell them how to really go in these little steps. Because I tell somebody, if you're not used to eating all that fiber, and most vegetarian diets usually have about 50 grams of fiber or more, and the minimum is 25. So I say, why don't we start increasing 5 grams of fiber per day slowly, until we reach that 30, 40, 50 that you may reach when you're eating a total vegetarian or a vegetarian diet. And if you are feeling constipated, you know, a supplement is not the answer in this case. A fiber supplement will make you more bloated, more constipated, horribly. Might send you to the hospital. So, you know, you have to walk that fine line when really a person needs a supplement. And when it's a little much, too much. Okay, so just, you know, we're trying to kind of then, again, you know, make it into small bullet points to them. If you focus better on the total intake of food for your whole day, and then, you know, instead, you know, of emphasizing on the, you know, on nutrients, you know, try to emphasize first on the whole, and then you can go into the nutrients. But first, it's like, okay, let's look at the overall picture here. Let's make sure it's science-based. When somebody asks you about something that you're questionable and you're pretty sure it's not science-based, I immediately asked them for the source. Where did you get that? How many clinical studies were done? Was this really peer review? Even when I review our own documents and our own journals, you have to make sure that before you make this, you know, you go out there on public television, that you make sure there is sufficient data to back up what you're doing. There's sufficient reports about it that constantly secure and concrete the information that you're saying, that yeah, it is true that if you are, you know, if you want to become, you know, if you want to have, you know, more vegetarian diet, you know, you need a B12 supplement, etc. I mean, so you need to make sure that this information is backed with scientific information and not just something that somebody wrote on the internet, because there's a lot of that in the internet. So ask them to bring it to you. The healthy diet, you know, it's an overtime. It's the good versus the bad. So many times, you know, when I go on TV, it's a sure question every time I go, Sylvia, just tell us what's all that horrible stuff that is on that product. Immediately. You tell them, you know, how horrible that is for them. Separate the good and the bad. And, you know, in television, of course, you know, if they want the drama, they want the, you know, the excitement. And you need to keep the excitement going. But at the same time, you know, you politely have to say, you know what, all foods are part of a well-balanced diet. We just need to limit some to a point. And if we omit some for some reason, we need to make sure we know how to substitute them. So I'm not going to, because, with all due respect, I am not going to go out there and say, these are all the horrible food, these are all the great food that you need to eat every day. Because that is just not a very practical way of giving nutrition information. And the healthy eating patterns and the supplements if we need them, of course, you know, reliance, you know, not an over-reliance of supplements, because food is the cornerstone of our everyday activities. There is great information now, of course, you know, there's great websites in the internet, there's listservs that you can refer them to, support groups for some of these, or you create one if you don't have one. Now with the social media, there is so much out there that you can do to really bring groups together to create discussions among them, no matter where you live. Wellness centers, I mean, there is so much that you can create to provide the right nutrition information. And the goals of the nutrition education are always to encourage a well-balanced diet, individualized, diets that include well amounts of age-appropriate, I always say, age-appropriate individual portions for their activity level, their gender, their ethnic group, whatever it is, from all food groups or substituting from others. To dispel the good and the bad, because again, you know, our message as nutrition experts is that all foods can be part of the food group as long as we do it with moderation or find a way to substitute them correctly. To discourage these extreme dietary habits like a high protein or a low carbohydrate that many times leads to malnutrition, and to take the small steps. And with the small steps that lead to the long, healthy lifestyle, even though they might take a little bit of time, it's one going to stay cemented in that. And be creative. Get out of your box. It's easy to say somebody, yeah, eat more salads. It's a great way to get more fruits and vegetables. Than to say somebody, you know what? When you make a veggie burger, you can put in corn. You can put in spinach. You can put in other food. You can put more grains. You can put that wild rice. I hide so many things in the foods that I make in my home. My kids don't know they're eating lots of vegetables. Oh, they tell their friends they never eat a vegetable, ever. Ever. But again, that juice that they eat every morning is a blended of carrots and orange and grape juice. That soup they had broccoli and had spinach. That lasagna had totally blended spinach and zucchini with, you know, our mixture, our fillers inside. I mean, there's so many ways to really do it without creating putting up a broccoli on their plate. And at the same time, you know, using the herbs and spices. We're talking about thyme, rosemary, garlic, onion, cilantro, all these herbs that are very low in calories, yet their flavors are astronomical. If I say to people, if you want to start eating well, use more herbs and more fresh herbs, garlic, onion, and you will see how you're going to start eating a little bit less because these foods are so powerful in flavor. And add less calories because it will be using less fat for adding flavor. Look at the big picture and always, you know, encourage foods first. And, you know, create that passion in people to eat the right foods and to enjoy what they're eating. You figure if you're going to put it in your body, you might as well enjoy it. So again, you know, it's like if they're going to have a piece of cake, I said, well, try to take the frosting off. Take a smaller portion instead of eating the whole slice. Don't have seconds. Eat seconds of something else that is lower in calories. And again, an individualized approach. I can't tell you, emphasize this more, how individual the needs are of everybody, and we need to take that into consideration. Consider how to reach, you know, a broad range of people without offending them and being more creative, and give them credit first. Make sure that you start with the positive at all times. Embrace new research. You know, this is really interesting because the nutrition field changes, I think, every day as a speed of light. I can't think of another field that changes so much. Every day there is new out there. You know, that fish have mercury, that these have the... I mean, every day there's messages on nutrition if you turn your TV on. So be willing also to shift paradigms at times when it's true. When these, you know, like Dr. Hodges was saying earlier, you know, there is many times that, you know, research will come in and we need to embrace that research and share it with the public. I still remember, you know, back when I was in school in the 80s, it was not necessary to tell somebody to take a multivitamin. And now, a few years ago, the American Medical Association recommended that most people can benefit from a multivitamin every day. I mean, that's a big change. Those are changes that are backed by data that we need to embrace and share them with the public. Here are some resources where I have taken some of this information, where you can go into the American Dietetic Association, great information there. Also the International Food, the IFIC, where these great surveys of consumers. Eat Smart, Work Hard. These are also information from the USDA and from these governmental resources. And to summarize it, I will say simplistic messages are necessary, bullet points, but at the same time, you need to make sure that you are not going to send somebody in the wrong direction. Make sure you examine the overall impact for the long term. Food groupings, if you have them, use them at your foundation. And choose foods, of course, help them to choose foods that are nutrient dense first, of course, at all times, and how to incorporate more of this nutrition into the foods that they're eating so that whatever they're having, it's going to create a long-term effect on their bodies. And this is what I have for today, so we'll take questions afterwards, and I'll be around, so if you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them. Gracias.